I'm so home, so lonely, Mr. Lonely. I have nobody.
We're all kind of lonely right now, except we're all here together. Except
yeah,
we're
not, don't have to be lonely now.
We're not all here together. Clint and I are here together.
Yes.
We are joined via the power of the future. Parker Fleming and Melissa, I don't want to butcher your last name, from Frogs of War. Tell me how you actually say it. I've actually never gotten this from you, the correct way to say your name.
It is Treebwasser.
Treebwasser.
Really just like it looks, but nobody ever assumes it's going to sound like it's supposed to sound.
I guarantee you it's spelled wrong on my phone also. So I...
oh, I'm quite certain that it is.
Well, welcome to the podcast. We've hinted at this for a while. I know Melissa and I, we were driving to Oklahoma for the Oklahoma State game last year. We did a crossover Twitter interaction. We kind of hinted at this and talked about this. And now that we have nothing else to do, we might as well all get together and be alone together.
Huzzah! We have combined forces.
But it's a good time to get y'all on here because y'all are doing something really cool at Frogs of War with the best moments in TCU sports history. I voted the first day, and today I'm going to vote live on the show. We can discuss the moments and see how things are going. We're going to talk a little bit about how the madness is affecting us. So we're slowly slipping into it. Clint has this game madness. He's been wanting to play for weeks.
Yes.
We're going to do, and then we got a bunch of Twitter questions. So first off, Parker, you want to tell me how your last couple weeks have been?
Dude, I'm sorry. I'm really having trouble hearing you.
How have your last couple weeks been?
Oh, how have my last couple weeks been? Well, we've been in quarantine for 2 weeks, and it was spring break. I mean, my life is, I'm a grad student, so no one really cares what I do. So it's not like my day-to-day has changed very much. I've just been sitting in my studio apartment, so.
Yeah, fair enough. Melissa, you?
Trapped like a carrot.
Yeah, hanging out.
Yeah, my experience has been a little bit different because I am a teacher, and so we have pivoted to distance learning here, finishing up our first week of doing that and second week of spring break. As a very social person in general who thrives off of people, this has been a struggle, we'll call it, but it's also been, it's been fun to see the different ways that people found to connect. We've been doing Zoom happy hours and lunches and get-togethers and everything, and so I have spent more time sitting in front of a computer looking at myself than I care to think about, and talking into a Blue Yeti microphone, which I also have, than I ever thought I would need to. So I'm either going to be so excited to be a classroom teacher in a classroom again whenever this ends, or I'm going to switch careers and become a gamer and a streamer because I feel like I'm just really, really exceptionally gifted in those areas at this point in my new version of my same career.
And you're originally from California. How's your family all out there? Everything going good?
Yeah, it's been really bad. Those of you guys have been following the news, which is probably all of us. California has been hit really hard, especially the Bay Area. And my sister and her husband both live in the Bay Area. My parents live in Sacramento. They've been shelter at home now for, I think, 2 weeks. Really having a hard time getting flour and sugar and eggs and milk and things like that. That's probably been the hardest part of all of this is being here and having my family out there and having no idea when I'll get to see them again. In person, but we get together almost every single day and drink a glass of wine together. So that is we've been doing that over Google Duo the last couple of weeks, and that's definitely been a fun part of the day and getting a chance to stay connected to my family, even though we're kind of all isolated in our own homes.
That sounds mostly for the good part. Clint, what about you? How your week's been?
Not much has changed for me because technically I'm in an exempt business now with the construction mats because, you know, the transmission and delivery electrical construction still has to happen. I'm technically essential.
Cool kids.
I got one of those letters in my passenger seat right now.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I haven't gotten to flash it yet.
Wow.
I really hope that I get pulled over on the way over here so I can be like, oh, yeah, I'm going to meet with my business associate.
Yeah. I hope you get to flash it soon.
But one interesting thing is my wife and I started watching Endurance episodes on YouTube a couple of days ago. This was like a Discovery Kids version of Survivor, like back in the early 2000s. My wife was like, oh, I used to love these. We should watch these. And it's been fun. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Well, like everyone, me and the girlfriend, we binged Tiger King.
Been watching that today.
Weekend, so. Yeah. Which
Tiger
I didn't.
King's exceptional. So good.
Exceptionally bonkers.
I had forgotten that I remembered who he was. I'd forgotten that I had heard of him when the presidential election 4 years ago. I'd forgotten all about him.
Yeah, we were talking about that before we started recording, how he was, John Oliver mentioned him when he was talking about third party candidates.
Oh, man. Okay, guys, so let's get into the Frogs of War bracket. Have all of y'all voted today? I'm sure you two have. But Clint, you voted on the way, on the way over here. You shouldn't have done that while you were driving.
I'm taking my life in my own hands, intermingling pathogens with you and voting on Twitter while I'm driving. I got just zero regard for human life.
I just think you're essential.
Wow.
You're just an essential man.
I'm essential.
Parker, have you noticed a trend here, like on the voting? Is it more recent stuff you think it's passing going on to the next round?
I think there's definitely a recency bias, and I definitely think there's an own Baylor bias, which is fine. That's great if that's what you want. I think it's hard to not. I mean, given TCU's entire history, and then the last 15 to 20 years, it's hard to not be biased towards things that happened more recently. That's what I've been noticing. We had some long contentious talks about the seating. You know, Jamie put all this together and then basically threw it out there and said, "Roast me," and we did roast him. And so I have a couple that I think are upsets that actually should be ranked a lot higher and should go further than their seed. But for the most part, it's hard to top some of these top seeds, and the voting so far is kind of going that way.
Yeah. So looking, the first one today is kind of a combo. More recent, I know it was a while ago now, the Curry Grand Slam versus an owning of Baylor in 1968. I'm guessing Curry's winning that one in a landslide right now.
Yeah, that's it. 97-3. Yeah.
Curry Grand Slam is a lock for the Elite Eight.
It is 100%. I just voted. It's 22 votes to 0 as of now.
Wow.
Next one, the Kessler sack to beat Oklahoma versus Denzel Johnson deflection to win the Alamo Bowl against Oregon.
I had a hard time with that one today.
I'm thinking long and hard about this one. I was at both games. Were y'all at both games? Were y'all at either of these games?
I was at both of them too.
Yeah, I was at both as well.
I do not think I was at the Alamo Bowl, but I wasn't at the Oklahoma game.
I tend to when it comes down to the tiebreaker in this, I tend to go to a game that either has like a trophy at the end of it or is a postseason game in some way. But that Oklahoma game was so huge.
Yeah.
But it's fourth and I just watched the highlight again, which thank y'all for putting the highlights on there too. Like 4th and 8 with a minute left, or I don't know. Tough.
I ultimately went Alamo Bowl because even though I was extremely hyped that entire day on the trip to Norman, I've never been so like out of my mind, excited and just dumbfounded throughout that entire second half and into overtime of that Alamo Bowl game. And when it was finally official, when we finally clinched it, I mean, it was just euphoria. So that's what I was trying to think back to how I felt at the time. I was like, you know what? And just listening to Brian Estridge just call over and over again, knocked away, that's so iconic.
Melissa. I think that we've been doing a podcast breaking down each region of the bracket as well. I mean, Anthony North, another one of our writers, and we talked about this too, and that the Alamo Bowl is going to elicit probably the votes, especially when you factor in the recency bias. Most of our readership, it tends to skew younger on Twitter at least. But maybe is that the moment we should have chosen from the Alamo Bowl? I'm not entirely sure. Like, it was the moment that sealed the win, obviously, but I think it's really forgotten about in the grand scheme of all the crazy things that happened in that game. And so, I probably would have gone with either the Aaron Green touchdown or the Bram Kohlhausen with the Cereal Bowl, or maybe even, the crazy Jaden Overcomp field goal that looked like it was a knuckleball coming off his foot and somehow got inside the uprights. But I think an Alamo Bowl moment is probably going to be just about anything outside of the Rose Bowl because it's still so fondly thought of from the TCU fan base.
Well, I think Bram stirring the pot is a 2 seed in another region. Is that right?
Okay, that might be.
Yeah, I think.
You think about that 2005 season, and this sucks and sounds super negative because I wasn't really a TCU fan until like 2008 when I started thinking about going there.
Boo.
But like, SMU happened the next week, and like, sure, TCU beat No. 5 Oklahoma and upset them, and all that in 5:35 gets you a Big Mac. I mean, they went to the Houston Bowl that year and played unranked Iowa State, so it wasn't as cosmologically significant, if you will. It definitely was like emblematic of TCU up and coming. Hey, there might be something here, but it was so early in that arc. The Alamo Bowl really feels like the hey, here's a group of random players who are going to play really, really hard and do something super weird and achieve something. And so that's why I skew Alamo Bowl here, is just that moment is so much bigger in the grand scheme of things. You know, if this was in 2010, that Oklahoma win probably is pretty close to a top seed. But so much has happened since then, and kind of the arc of TCU, I think I skew more towards the Alamo Bowl there.
Yeah, I voted Alamo Bowl as well. I think the most underrated play from that entire game, though, is the first touchdown. It was fourth and long and like a bomb to Jalen Austin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think that's a play that people don't remember. It's fourth and long. If they don't pick up that, they probably don't come back.
Yeah.
It's a crazy underrated play, in my opinion, for that one. Let's see. The next game, Cody Jones to Keaton Jones, 13th inning relay to beat, or I guess in the game against Sam Houston State. And then this Jonathan Song overtime winner against and to win the Cheez-It Bowl. I remember showing up to that Sam Houston State game at midnight in like the 10th inning and got like a full 3 hours of baseball.
Yeah.
Like I was out drinking some friends and go, they're still playing, and like went out there and watched the end of it.
How many innings did that one end up in?
22.
24? Yeah, 22. Yeah, God. 22,
yeah. Isn't this where the Woos were born?
That game also, I believe, is the birth of the Woo Bird. Yeah. And so that does give it a little bit of a boost as well when it comes to TCU Athletics lore.
That means like,
that makes all of us want to vote against it, right?
100%. I'm voting Song now just for that. I can't stand the Woo Birds.
That was such a cool moment.
It's also hard because like baseball is so dependent on like the entire course of the game, and the OT field goal is just a little bit more tangible of a moment. But that Sam Houston State game, for like being awake and watching it, was pretty. That was a pretty insane baseball play.
Oh, it was madness! Nice. It was madness.
Personally, I'm upset that the Juwan Johnson non-interception return for a touchdown that was called back was not included as one of the greatest moments in TCU.
Yeah, I was.
We may have to cut this, but I told Jamie he should have just put Cohen falling and getting flagged.
Well, I think you should have just made a whole region just interceptions from the Cheez-It Bowl.
What we should have done is we should have just put that no context college football tweet up that pops up every few weeks of Cheez-It Bowl points 6, interception 7 or whatever, or points, yeah, whatever it was when there were more interceptions than points total in the game. That could have been it, too.
Justin Rogers, without the use of his feet, enters the game.
Well, he still shrugged off like an All-American linebacker.
That was an awesome moment.
That's his best moment in a TCU uniform, sadly. Oh, man. Sadly. I can't wait to watch him at UNLV. Maybe. Hopefully.
Hopefully.
Hopefully. All right, next, the Boykin flip versus Reiser robbing the home run against Texas. The Reiser play was number one on SportsCenter, I believe. Boykin might have been, too, honestly. Mm-hmm. But, man, those were both crazy plays, too. These are like regular season games that are just amazing plays.
Yeah, you know, this one is an interesting one because they're both really just like ridiculous feats of athleticism, but neither one of them had, well, I mean, I guess the Risers end up being a game winner, but in the course of the regular season and a disappointing season, didn't have a huge impact on TCU's overall, ending result of the year. The Boykin flip, that Kansas State game was kind of a blowout, and so it was a really impressive play, but would it have made a difference in the game? No. That being said, I think that the Boykin flip is currently running away with it, probably will, and has a chance to advance. Because if you think back to that game, it was a blackout game. It was a night game.
Was it a Thursday night game?
The stadium was
I think West Virginia was the Thursday night game.
West Virginia was Thursday? Okay.
My favorite Boykin moment happened was the whole go high five.
Yeah.
Yes. That was a blackout game, too, I think, for Kansas State. This wasn't on a Thursday. And I just remember how like crazy the atmosphere was that night and just how insane it was. And I remember when Boykin left his feet, you could almost feel the air getting sucked out of the stadium because people were so nervous about how he would land and so afraid that something bad was going to happen. He was going to get hurt. And then as he popped back up, like just exploded and just utter chaos. So it was a really fun game to be at. And, just one of the many, many ridiculous plays that Trayvon made over the course of those two seasons.
I voted Reiser, but it's close. It's 60-40 right now with only 22 votes cast, so it's plenty of time for that one to get. I think it's gonna be close. Do you think there's an anti Boykin sentiment now with all the stuff post his career?
That's a tough question. I mean, the memories are still there. You know, they no one can take those away, Billy.
No, but I still think.
Yeah. I think you need to update your Twitter, though, because this is 77-22 now, Boykin over Reiser. So I guess there's not much of a Boykin bias here.
Oh, I'm voting on Frogs of War.
Yeah.
Is that the same vote?
On the, okay, I'm checking Twitter, and you're checking the
I'm actually going on the website. I'm giving you guys clicks.
Oh, so you can vote twice?
You can vote twice on this?
Yeah, you technically vote twice.
Man, so maybe, man, I don't know.
We need to stuff the ballot box for Reiser, man, because I fall on the Reiser side of that debate, because that play was just bananas. That was, it was like Barry Bonds level, you know? How did he get up there?
Yeah. Crazy.
Yeah, and I mean, like, Boykin, I think we've done a good job collectively as a TCU fan base separating, I think because of the Alamo Bowl win without him, we were able to say, like, okay, our quarterback, college hero, is done and gone, and we can remember him fondly, and then we can lament all of the unfortunate circumstances that happened after that. And so I don't think there's any anti-Boykin bias just because we're able to compartmentalize pretty well.
That's true. It does seem like something will pop up, sadly, every few weeks or months or so, and everyone's like, well, praying for him, praying his family. Everyone seems to have a mostly positive attitude about him anyway.
Yeah, I'm sad for him. I don't feel bad. I mean, like, he made some really dumb mistakes, and I feel really sad for him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely.
Next, Jalen Reagor versus Cameron Norrie. That's really unfortunate for Cameron Norrie.
Yeah, honestly. That's unfortunate seating for him.
That Reagor play is unbelievable. And if you watched him in high school at all, he did the same thing back-to-back weeks against Ennis and Highland Park. Of course, I'm a Waxahachie alum, so I'm very more familiar with those plays. But it was crazy watching that similar play against Baylor. I still kind of think he was out of bounds like late in that, but they gave him that one.
So Max was in, but Reagor was out.
Max was in, but Reagor was out. Both were reviewed, though. So
That play was
insane. It's absolutely unbelievable.
That saved our season, that one play, you might say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it absolutely saved our season because we played the Cheez-It Bowl that year. And nothing is ever going to top that moment. Yeah.
He put the team on his back.
You got to vote for Reagor just because that gave us the Cheez-It Bowl.
I was talking about on the podcast when I was recording with Anthony, is the reason that I voted for that particular moment is I went down to that game and I was on the sideline taking pictures, and I have a ton of former students who go to Baylor now, so they were getting large sections of the Baylor student section to heckle me as the photographer the whole game. And so when Reagor broke free and made that move and came up, I just turned around and just kind of waved at the student. It was just such a great moment. It was it was awesome.
Still think the best part of that game was the mule staying undefeated. Mm-hmm. Like as great as Reagor was, but like during the game, like covering the game, you saw like Foster Sawyer like tweeting out like how happy he was to see Mulesign go in this, and they came to TCU together. Everyone thought Foster was gonna be the chosen one, the next big thing, and then Grayson having the more impactful college career at the end of the day. Crazy. Next, LT.
That is crazy.
LT, it was just a crazy game. I'm gonna keep saying crazy a whole bunch. I don't have any more words to say. LT rushes 406 versus Garland Green, scoring 7 straight to beat Kansas. LT.
Yeah. Not much debate for me there.
But that is, like, the beating Kansas, though.
That's another unfortunate seeding.
For the
really.
First Big 12 win.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Wasn't that the year where Kansas, like, literally had food poisoning and lost 3 straight games in a row, and one of those
Parker.
Was TCU?
Hey, don't take Parker. This away from everyone.
Stop it.
Yeah, I think we were the
Kansas
second
guys
loss
are, like,
of
throwing
that.
Up in the tunnel before the game, and then they don't score a basket the entire first half, and then TCU wins. Yeah, that game was hilarious, but you got to vote for LT.
LT might, I mean, he won't win this whole thing, but he deserves to go far for that one alone. How about a national champion as a 7 seed? I just scrolled down one more and saw that.
Yeah. Dumapaya kind of got screwed here because he really should have run away with this one. But, I mean, everybody loves Desmond Bain.
Especially now, fresh off of Bain's career ending. On the website, though, it's 18-1 votes for Mapaya.
Yeah, on Twitter, Bain is running away with it so far. It has more votes than any other moment on this bracket, and he's got 60% of it. Well, I guess it is tightening up just a little bit. And Dumapai already retweeted it, so he's gonna get some help, I think.
So did their track and field, like TCU track and field Twitter account, retweeted all that stuff too. So I don't know if you saw that or not, but it should be interesting. But man, he's a national champion. He's TCU's last national champion.
Did Rifle happen before or after that?
Yeah,
was Rifle before or after
we
that?
We won Rifle. I guess it was before, yeah.
I think this was like last summer, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And Rifle should be happening like right now.
Should be. But it's not.
If only we could shoot the virus. Yeah,
I was trying to think of something.
But it's not. Dotson went into catch versus Minnesota. Philip Hinson, 4th-and-1 stop versus Stanford.
I mean, you got to go. You got to go, J-Doc.
Do you?
I think. Dude, I mean,
wasn't this game a blowout? That, like, it's a great catch. That was a blowout.
Well, yes, but it was an amazing catch. It's an iconic TCU moment. And as cool as that 2008 Stanford game was and being soaking wet and all of that,
yeah.
It just... At the end, it's kind of like what Parker was saying about Oklahoma. Like at the end, in the grand scheme of things, that Stanford game didn't really mean all that much. You know, that stop. Yes, it won us the game, and it was memorable because of the heavy rain. But like when I think of Josh Doctson, that is the first image that pops into my mind is that Minnesota catch.
Yeah, probably.
And you're talking about easily the best wide receiver in TCU history.
I don't. I think about that or the catch he didn't make, the tip to Aaron Green.
Well, yes, but I think of Aaron Green. Aaron Green
caught like 30 passes that game.
Those two photos are probably the two most iconic photos that we think of when we think of recent TCU football history. Right? Is Aaron Green with his hands up and his eyes wide and all the surrender cobras in the background at Tech, and that one-handed Josh Doctson at the peak of his jump, reaching out and somehow holding on to the football.
I agree. Those are two seminal moments.
That's just where you know you were like, okay, Josh Doctson is a superhuman, and we might have a really good team this year. So I like the Doctson moment. Less for, like, one, it's an amazing catch on its own, but you know, again, contextualizing things into broader categories. Like, you saw that play, and you're like, this might not be just a good TCU team. This might be like a great TCU team.
Fair, that's true. I mean, I was thinking, oh, it's just Minnesota, is what I thought. And then the next week was Oklahoma. Was the next week Oklahoma? Was the next week SMU?
The Minnesota, I think that was our second game
it
that
was,
year.
It was
Samford was the first
FCS,
game.
Yes, Minnesota.
Yeah, SMU.
Then SMU. Then I think Oklahoma.
Okay, yeah.
I think
Oklahoma was early that year. I
Oklahoma
that.
Was early, yeah. And then it was then Baylor the next week.
Yeah, and we don't need to mention.
We don't
that.
Need to talk about that one at all.
Yeah.
Well, Parker, you were mentioning the worst moment in you can remember the other day. Is that what you tweeted out?
Yeah, we were kicking that around for a little bit. I honestly, though, I'm kind of – this might be me just being contrarian and being annoyed by Baylor Twitter, but, like, 61-58 sucked, but I don't think it's, like, the worst TCU loss ever. I mean, it was on the road – it's to a rival, sure, but it's, like, on the road to a top-five team. There was a controversial call at the end. Like, I mean, stuff happened. It sucked. I don't like it.
But Parker, you're thinking about things logically here.
Yeah, it doesn't suck for that game alone, though. It sucks for, like, what it meant. Like, you look back and you think one play away from, I still will go to my grave believing from winning a national championship in 2014.
Absolutely.
Like, that TCU team would have won it all.
I'm convinced there's no way TCU was going to the playoff regardless of anything that happened. So,
you don't think an undefeated TCU team in the Big 12 would go to the playoff? Because that is a take, sir.
Just that, if you just see, like, okay, what else has to happen? Like, literally, the only thing separating TCU from the playoff was a one-score loss on the road to a top-five team, and Ohio State gets blown out by friggin' Virginia Tech, and they still, like, default to Ohio State.
At home to a 6-6. At home to a 6-6 Virginia Tech.
Yeah.
But the thing is, there was not one true champion. That was the kicker there. They went the easy way. They didn't want to decide between Baylor and TCU, so they picked Ohio State.
Yeah.
But like, if
they were undefeated, we would
have. If TCU wins that game, they're in. They were number three, then won by 52 points and dropped to 6.
Yep.
That's still absurd.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
There's no way they weren't good. I was on it. I had so many radio interviews that weekend, the night of after the Iowa State game, with like people in Vegas. I was on Vegas, New York, and Houston radio stations that night, like talking about the game. I was like, oh, yeah, TCU's going to the playoff. Oh, yeah, TCU's definitely going to the playoff. There's no way they can't put them in. They're ranked number three.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Parker, but I think the wording of your tweet was, what was the worst loss that you experienced in person? Like, you were at the game. And nothing comes close to how upset I was at the end of that game, that 61-58 game. Because losing to Baylor, period, point blank, at any time is always upsetting. But when you factor in the stakes of that game, even that early in the season, how highly we were both ranked, and the way in which we lost that game, in which you feel like it was stolen from you, you know, for lack of a better word.
I mean,
that was pretty brutal.
24-point lead or whatever.
Well, no, yes.
The Dotson
so
no call.
First, we choke, yes, to give up the 24-point lead. But then, yes, we still have the no call where it's like, oh, that should be a pass interference. We can still come out of this alive.
Yeah, and you trust and overcome you from 55 yards to win it or whatever, right there.
Yes, exactly.
Instead of their kicker, who they gave a PI to, by the way, on that last drive, which wasn't real. That one's up there. That was definitely the worst I've been to. But other games, other losses I can think of were Southern Miss and Utah.
Southern Miss is that, man, yeah, so Utah in 2008 and Southern Miss in 2003.
Because it was right before my
That was soul-crushing. And for me, because I went to school with exclusively UT fans who thought that it was just so lame that I was a TCU fan. And coming to school that Monday after that Southern Miss loss, I mean, the jeers and just, ah, y'all lost and blah, blah. It was just brutal. Absolutely brutal.
Well,
we forget, though, but aside from that TCU loss, I love that, like, early 2000s, late 90s USM team that was like, if you come to Hattiesburg, we're going to kick your ass and we're going to play you hard anywhere else. Like, that is the kind of non-Power 5 football I love. That team was awesome, TCU beating aside.
Sure, it's cool until they take away your Fiesta Bowl bid. That's not cool anymore.
Who was on that team? Like, is there anyone notable on that team?
Probably, if you looked them up. But yeah, it's literally, I talk about this all the time, the week before we beat Cincinnati and we all threw up bags of Tostitos chips in the stands because everyone was convinced we're going to be the first BCS buster. We're going to the Fiesta Bowl. It's going to happen. And like, all we got to do is beat Southern Miss. That'll be no problem. And just completely melt down the next week.
I see no notable players in that team. Antoine Cash sounds real familiar for some reason.
I mean, it would be par for the course if there were no notable players.
I can't think of anyone notable.
Honestly, the list of like drafted players is very thin. Yeah.
For Southern Miss?
Yeah. I mean, they have a lot of players. I'm just saying, I just don't, none of them from that time period, it's about like 2000 to 2006.
Brett Favre, and that's about it.
Well, he was in the 90s,
though. I know. it would have been okay losing to Brett Favre in college. That would have been awesome.
That would be kind of fun. We lost to J.P. Losman in 2004.
I was at that game, too. I brought family that went to Tulane to that game. Because we had Christmas in Louisiana every year. Some of my family went to Tulane. We drove back to Fort Worth for the game and then drove back to Louisiana that night afterward.
We're such TCU fans. A talk about greatest moments bracket has devolved into talking about horrible moments.
You can have yin and yang.
Things are bad right now, okay?
What was your most mediocre TCU moment?
We can blame Danny for a lot of things, but we can blame Parker for our pain. It's generally his fault.
Your most mediocre.
Yeah, what's your most mediocre TCU moment?
Honestly, it's got to be like an Air Force win my sophomore year or something. Sophomore year Air Force, we just like beat them, and you're like, everyone's trying to get hype, but we know this isn't a competition. Like, whatever, you know, whatever.
Well, then the year before,
my most mediocre TCU moment was my dating life.
Zing. Hey, at least you had a dating life at TCU.
Yeah, right.
At least it was able to be mediocre. All right, Parker, you got anything you want to get off your chest? I know you've. I figure you normally do, but I know you started your own show last night, right? Did I make that up? Was that a dream I had? Oh, can you not hear me now?
I think I lost you there for a second.
Oh, sorry. No. Okay, I'll repeat the nice things I said about you. I said, do you have anything you want to get off your chest? And then I think you started your own podcast last night if you wanted to give it a plug, or you just want to say whatever you want.
Oh, yeah. Well, so we've been me and Grant podcasted on the Frogs of War feed all last season. Just kind of it started as – like, hey, I'm going to do an episode because I'm bored in the summer. And then I started doing it regularly. And then I had Grant on regularly. And so we're just making our own feed. And so same great content, a compliment to, you know, all the other TCU content that's out there, using, you know, Grant's great with narratives and the journalistic side of things. And I'm a little more focused on like the numbers and the advanced stats and kind of thinking about how we're thinking about things. And so I think it's a really fun podcast. Yeah, we just did an episode last night and finally did our 2019 recap, talked about returning production. So yeah, it's pretty cool. It's called our working title is Purple Theory, because it's about TCU, and it is anywhere you can find podcasts.
Parker said thinking about how we're thinking about things.
Yeah, it's very Parkerism.
Yeah.
Cognition.
All right, so Clint, you want to play your game? You've been trying to do
this
game for a while.
I'm not going to play it by myself. Well, I'm going to moderate as you partake in the joy that is this game that I assembled over the course of an afternoon.
Okay, try and explain it to them, and we'll see how this works.
Okay, so this game, everyone is going to be on their own team, right? So this is, we're going to do Purple Theory versus Purple Menace versus Frogs of War. We're going to determine the preeminent podcast here through this game.
Oh, boy.
And this is all centered around teams that TCU has played more than once, that the TCU football team is either undefeated against or never beaten. Okay? So the way this is going to work is I'm going to say, okay, y'all are going to have to try and guess the team is what we're doing. So I'll say what the record is, whether it's defeated or undefeated, okay. And then I'll give you a series of four clues. If you can get it in the first clue, you get 4 points. If you get in the second, 3 points, et cetera, et cetera. Okay? And the first clue is always going to be the series history. So we played this year, scores were this, this, and this.
So what is, so you just, so TCU is 3-0 against this team, we can just guess?
Sure, yeah. I mean, you could guess then, and then, yeah, I guess I'll give you 5 points then, I guess.
We've never done this before. We've never done this. I'm sure doing this amongst a Google Hangout is the perfect scenario to try and do this game for the first time.
Okay.
Let's go for it. All right.
Okay, so first team, and Billy, you can't look at my phone.
I was trying, but I couldn't see it.
I have Wikipedia up right now.
Oh, come on.
Well, don't cheat, please.
Cheating.
No, I'm not going to cheat. I don't have Wikipedia. I was joking. I'm not cheating. I'm not going
to
cheat.
Okay. Cheating is not allowed.
I'm going to be really mad at this game, by the way.
This isn't an SMU podcast. Okay, so this first team, this is actually a relatively easy one. I think that somebody's going to be able to get this from the first clue. So TCU is 0-4 against this team all time. Never beaten them. This is the worst record that we have against a team in this game. 0-4. All right? So we played them in 1942. We lost 40-26. In 1980, we lost 34-3. In 1988, we lost 38-10, and in 2016, we lost 31-23.
We're going to 2016.
So it's 2016. So it's fairly recent. Was our most recent?
Oh, I got it.
Who you think?
Georgia.
All right, Billy. Hey.
Oh yeah.
Georgia, absolutely. Billy.
Speaking of most mediocre TCU moments, that Liberty Bowl was awesome.
Oh, I was at that game. That's the first football game I ever covered as credentialed media. Almost made me wanted to quit right there.
No.
But don't lie, that barbecue in the press box was bomb.
Barbecue was bomb.
The barbecue was bomb.
Liberty Bowl, you can get a Prono Pup and a beer for like $8. It's ideal. But yeah, it was just a very bad day, very bad game.
Free barbecue in the press box. That's a deal.
Fun fact about this Georgia series, that 34-3 loss in 1980, guess who the Georgia running back was in that game?
Herschel Walker.
That's Herschel absolutely Walker. Right as well. Yes.
I know. This is now a Georgia podcast. I know the most about Georgia, apparently.
Okay, so second team. We are 7-0 against this team. Best record on this list. Never lost to this team. All right? So we played them every year from 2005 to 2011. All right? Scores were 23-20, 52-6, 45-33, 41-7, 55-12, 40-35, that was in 2010, and 27-14 in 2011.
San Diego State?
Oh, Melissa gets it.
Got it. I was torn between San Diego State and UNLV. Because we were.
I was waiting for that really close score that last year, the Mountain West.
Yeah.
That was Rose Bowl.
We were talking about that last week in the podcast.
Yeah, we were talking about it last week. Last game in the old Eamon Carter Stadium, and they almost ruined our season.
They tried so hard to lose that game.
Okay, number three. So 0-3 all time against this team. We lost in 1940, 21-10. 1994, 27-17, and 1997, 31-10.
The WAC team, right?
Well, not necessarily. They only played three times. I guess the WAC was weird.
Well, one of the three was in 1940, and then the other two were 94 and 97. So 94, we were still in the Southwest Conference.
Can we guess more than once?
I'll give you one guess on the first clue.
Like, no, that's not going to be right. Never mind.
Yeah, Parker, Melissa, y'all got any guesses?
I don't know. It's going to be somebody weird, like Rice or something.
Okay, clue number two.
We played Rice a bunch, yeah.
That was my first instinct, too, actually, by the way.
Well, Rice was a Southwest Conference team.
Yeah, I know. That's why I said they would have played more.
I was just trying to think of, like, smaller Southwest Conference team that might have been sneaky decent a while back or something. I don't know. Yeah.
Okay, so clue number two for you. This is a basketball powerhouse.
Kentucky?
Not Kentucky.
So we can keep guessing.
So, Billy, you get a guess, and Parker, you get a guess, and then we'll move on to the next clue.
What were the years again, sorry?
1940, 1994, and 1997.
Like a current powerhouse, or like a blue blood?
A basketball blue blood. They're always a powerhouse.
I think I have another second guess when he comes back around, but I'll go to
Duke.
It's not Duke.
Oh,
Parker, you got one?
I was going to say North Carolina, just spitballing.
The way you said it.
It is North Carolina, actually.
The way you said it's not Duke. I was like, oh, I bet it's UNC now.
Yes. All right. I'm going to write you down for three, Parker. Actually, also, that 97 squad featured Dre Bly, Algie Crumpler, and head coach Mac Brown.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
In 1997. How, and what goes around comes around, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we might get to see him again in a couple of years.
Okay, team number four. We're 6-0 all time against this team. All right, so another undefeated one. We played them every year from 2001 to 2006. We beat them 38-20 in 2001, 46-27 in 2002, 27-0 in 2003, 21-17, 38-17, and 31-17.
Melissa knows this one. You can have it.
Wait, say, give me
this. This was her era. This is when she was here.
Part of it again.
Say what again?
Tell me and say it again.
Okay, so every year.
I need some guys, and I'm not leaving my house. It's a problem.
Every year from 2001 to 2006, we played this team, okay. And we beat them every year.
It's a Conference USA team, right? I'm assuming.
Yeah, I think they were Conference USA.
Wait, is this Memphis?
It's not Memphis.
It's a Louisville.
No.
It's not Louisville.
Because we lost to Louisville.
We lost to Louisville, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I remember that loss to Louisville. I know this one. I know who it is. I cannot pull the name out of my head.
Move to the second clue?
Second clue.
Yep. Give me clue number two.
Okay. So we'll see what you do with this clue. The 2001 game was especially significant due to world events.
Is that Air Force?
Not Air Force.
No. Oh.
We've lost to Air Force before.
Army?
It was Army, yes.
Yeah, I knew we lost to Air Force.
Yes. My third clue was going to be Coach P parachuted before the 2005 game, if y'all remember that.
Oh, not onto the field. I'm thinking onto the field
before not onto the field, but they showed it on the video board before the 2005 game of him parachuting with an Army guy.
Dang it.
All right. Number five. So we are 0-3 against this team all time. We lost to them 7-6 in 1966, 10-7 in 1980, and 24-16 in 1981. Man, we had a brutal out of conference in 1980, now that I think about it.
Oh.
I have no guesses. I have no idea.
None.
Like, who the hell is good in 1980? You said it's brutal.
Well, just name-wise, it was brutal for an out of conference in 1980.
Oh, we don't know.
Okay, clue number two. This is an SEC school.
An SEC school that we've only played three times and never beaten.
Correct.
Sorry, what was the last year again?
1981,
24-16. It's not Alabama,
Florida?
Is it?
It's not Florida. It's not Alabama. Parker, you got one?
Just Tennessee.
It's not Tennessee. Okay, clue number three. This should give it to somebody. First game occurred 2 years before freshman season of a future TCU coach.
Oh, what?
So the 1966 game occurred 2 years before the freshman season of a future TCU coach at this school.
Oh, it's, No! Come to me! It's here! Hold on. Isn't this just passed away?
Uh-huh.
Right?
Did just pass away.
He did just pass away. He played in the NFL as well.
Auburn.
It is Auburn, Bella. You beat her to the punch.
Dang it. I was so close. I knew everything. It's just I could not pull the school name out.
Yes. So we're 0-3 against Auburn. And we played Auburn and Georgia in 1980 outside the conference.
Wow.
That's what I'm saying. That's brutal. All right. Number six. 4-0 all time against this squad. We beat them 20-14 in 1941, 7-6 in 1948. 13-6 in 1949, and then 31-28 in 1972. One of very few wins in the 70s.
Gosh, if you got beat by TCU in the 70s, do you still have a football?
I can confirm they do still have a football program. These are all active schools. I didn't include Toby's Business College in this.
I have no idea.
Lost to TCU in the 70s. Had to be real bad. Only played four times.
Y'all want another clue?
Another clue? Okay. Yeah. This is another traditional basketball power.
Were they said earlier?
Were they a basketball powerhouse earlier?
Did we mention them earlier? No, my Parker has a question. Parker says something. Parker had a guess.
It's not Kentucky, no.
I was going to guess Duke just because you gave us North Carolina earlier.
It's not Duke either.
UCLA.
Nope, not UCLA. All right, I'm going to move up my clue four to clue three. So after they lost to TCU in 1972, they hired a coach that would go on to wear the TCU Super Frog head on multiple occasions.
Florida State.
Not Florida State.
Yeah. No.
Notre Dame?
Not Notre Dame.
I don't know where he coached before.
Yeah, where did he coach before?
Where was Lee Corso before FSU?
Did Lee Corso actually coach at FSU? I thought he only went there.
I don't know. I have no idea.
I thought he had a bad stint there. I'm...
Okay, last clue. This is a Big Ten school that Lee Corso coached at. And was Indiana. A basketball pa- Yeah, there it is, Indiana.
I cheated.
Oh, come on, Bozo. Boo. Not an SMU podcast. All right, got another one for you. 0-2 all time against this school. We lost to them in 1967 and 1968 by scores of 24-7 and 17-7.
Home and home, huh?
Yep. Actually, it was not a home and home. Both of them were played...
Well, that's rude.
Yeah, very rude. I mean, y'all are just going to be completely thrown darts.
Or Oregon.
It's not Oregon, no. We've beaten Oregon, Billy.
Know,
come on.
I know.
Clue number two?
Yeah.
It's an ACC team.
Florida State.
It's not Florida State.
Okay.
Syracuse.
It's not Syracuse. We beat Syracuse in the Cotton Bowl, if you'll remember.
Jim Brown's last game.
Yes, Jim Brown.
Boston College.
Not Boston College. Okay.
Duke.
Let's. Not Duke, actually.
I could list all the ACC schools. I don't know. Yeah.
So, okay, I'm going to see if y'all can get it off of this one. Coach P has won an award named after the coach who retired before the 67 season.
Where do you find these clues? They're the most random clues.
I made these up. The coach is Bobby Dodd, if that helps you. Bobby
Dodd. It does
help
me.
Because Coach P won the Bobby Dodd Coach of the Year Award one year.
Yeah. I remember him winning the award. I don't remember where Bobby Dodd coached.
Yeah, not a clue. It wasn't them. Oh?
Wake Forest.
Not Wake Forest.
Virginia Tech.
Not Virginia Tech.
I know it's not Virginia.
Are there any other ACC schools?
the U?
What was your guess, Melissa?
Virginia?
Not Virginia, but clue
no, we
four.
Beat Virginia.
Clue
I remember
four.
Virginia.
Yeah,
we beat Virginia at least twice in recent memory.
Yeah.
So, last clue, it is a tech school.
Georgia Tech.
There you go, Parker.
Goddammit, I sure know that. Okay, Bobby Dodd just got in my head because I got that. I got the Bill Conley 50 Best Teams book, and I literally just read the Georgia Tech chapter. And so I was like, that's ringing around in my head. That was a random guess. I didn't get it. I should have known it, though.
I'm disappointed in you for not getting it sooner. Okay, 3-0 all time against this team. We beat them in 2007, 38-36, in 2008, 31-14, and in 2017, 39-37.
Stanford.
Yeah, this is a gimme. I was like, it's going to be whoever gets it first. Congratulations, Billy. Stanford, yes.
Thank you.
All right, we're 0-2.
Stanford, dang it.
0-2 all time against this team. This is another one that has a recent game. 26-19 in 1953. And
that's not recent.
No, but this is the recent one. 17-16 in 2012.
Lost 17-16 in 2012?
Louisiana Tech?
Yeah.
Not Louisiana Tech. We beat them in the Poinsettia Bowl.
Yeah. Oh, I thought you said we were 2-0, not 0-2.
No, 0-2. Sorry, 0-2.
Wait, 2012? Oh, no. Okay, never mind. That was 20. I think of 2011.
Beat them 17-16?
We lost 17-16 in 2012, and we lost in 1953.
Michigan State?
It is Michigan State.
Yeah.
Michigan State? Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, God. That terrible Buffalo Wild Wings bowl where Sky Dawson fumbled the punt on the two-yard line.
My last game as an equipment manager.
Sky Dawson fumbled the punt because...
That particular fumble, yeah.
Yeah, that was going to be my last clue if y'all still couldn't get it before. All right, here's a team.
No one, no one brought that up as being one of the worst TCU losses. That game sucked just watching mm-hmm. that.
That game was just a like, terrible game.
Yeah. Yeah. It sucked, especially for me on a personal level, because that was my last game as an equipment manager in my senior year. Yeah. That's how I freaking, after a career that included Fiesta Bowl, Rose Bowl, like beating Boise State for the Mountain West in 2011, I freaking ended with Buffalo Wild wins. Very sad.
Wow.
Very sad.
So here we go. We're 2-0-1. Two wins, one tie against this team. We tied them 13-13 in 1981. We beat them 24-9 in 1982. And we beat them 62-18 in 1984. Those 82 and 84 games were Kenneth Davis years, who's running all over them.
I'm going to need another clue.
Need another clue, everyone?
Duke.
It's not Duke. Oh. Kentucky. It's not Kentucky. So this is a current Mountain West Conference team.
Colorado State.
Not Colorado State.
No, because they were in the Mountain West with us. This has got to be somebody who moved. Somebody. We are San Jose State, Fresno? San Jose State?
Fresno. San Jose State's campus at Fresno, California?
It's neither of those. Neither of those. Do we need a third clue?
Of course.
Okay. Yes. So this, I found this very interesting about them, and hopefully it'll help you figure out who they are. Their coach, this is like their legendary coach from 1919 to 1948. His name is Dick Romney, and he's actually related to Mitt Romney.
So BYU?
No, not BYU. No,
or Utah.
Utah State.
Oh, yeah.
It's Utah State. Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Congratulations, Melissa. Points.
Hey, thanks.
How many do you got left? Can you do one more?
Well, I got a few more.
We can save some for another show if you want.
That's true. I got all together.
We have a bunch of Twitter questions.
I'm getting tanked. That's all I'm saying. Yeah, I'm getting beaten really bad.
What's the score so we can determine if I want
to
stop playing?
I have to be winning. So
there's
I'm okay
16. Stop. There's 16 teams all together. We're on number 11. And let's see. Melissa has 3. Billy has 8. Parker has 1. Melissa has 4. Billy has 10.
I have 13. Melissa has 7. 10. Parker has 4.
Oh, you've been keeping count. You've been keeping score. Okay. Yes.
We'll do one more, see if Melissa can catch me.
Okay.
All right.
One more for you.
Give me a good one. Give me something a little more modern.
Okay. A little more modern, you said?
I don't know any other ones either.
All these other ones are like, we've played them twice. So, I mean, there's one that's like a gimme in here, but here's one that's interesting. Okay. We have beaten this team, and we've tied this team. We're 1-0-1 against them. Never lost.
Okay.
So, we beat them.
Never lost.
We
undefeated.
We're undefeated. We beat them in 1959, 13-3, and we tied them 7-7 in 1960.
I thought you said this was a gimme.
Well, it's not a gimme. It's an interesting one.
Is it Duke?
It's not Duke.
Okay.
Duke is not on this list, I will tell you. All right, clue number 2. I'll give you clue number 2.
Yeah.
Both of these teams that couldn't beat TCU, Mike Ditka played on.
Chicago Bears is not a good guess.
I was thinking like Loyola Chicago.
Bad guess. Where did Mike Ditka play football?
Like Illinois or something like that?
Do we already have Indiana? Was Indiana?
Yeah, Indiana was one.
Got points on that
with Lee Corso, yeah.
Illinois.
It's not Illinois, no. They are a current ACC team. They were independent at the time, but they're a current ACC team.
And just to be sure, it's not Duke.
It is not Duke.
Okay.
Virginia. Not Notre Dame, because they were not. Was it Notre Dame? Martin Ditka did not play for Notre Dame.
Oh, that's
it's cool. Not Notre Dame, no.
Florida
In fact,
State.
We are 0-1 against Notre Dame all time, fun fact.
Wait, was it NC State?
Not NC State. And you guessed who?
I was trying to think of somebody.
I take it back. I didn't want to say Florida State, because I know they've beaten us before.
I can't see Billy. I just assume he's Googling right now. And
I'm not. Doing a hand check. We'll do a hand check like you did in high school. Hand check. Oh, is it Wake Forest, Melissa asked.
It's not Wake Forest, no. Last clue for you. The pro team
Syracuse.
That plays in their city is a Cowboys rival. Dallas Cowboys rival.
Oh, where's Washington? Who plays? Virginia Tech?
Not Virginia Tech.
Where's the Washington professional football team play?
Pitt.
Rutgers.
What? What was that, Parker?
Pitt.
It is Pitt. Yes.
Pitt. Oh,
Pittsburgh Steelers.
Steelers.
Yes.
All right, Parker gets the last one.
You don't want to play another one?
I'm already winning. I don't need to play anymore. I'm winning. I could be fine being done. So they have another show to do here in a little bit. I want to get them. I want to give them time.
True. That's true.
So All right, on to Twitter. Unless you guys want to play some more, you guys can go to Twitter questions. I'll let y'all decide.
We got five more.
I'm getting dragged right now, so yeah. I have no vote on.
Yeah, let's save them for something else. All right.
Yeah, I'm good either way. I know I can catch Billy, but I'm also my knowledge is running low at this point, I think.
All right, let's go to Twitter questions. Sean McDermott at I'm Bored Brother. Which moment gives you the most chills watching back? His is the Curry Grand Slam.
Which moment out of all TCU moments?
Yeah, I guess so.
Immaculate deflection.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the Tank Carter play, yeah.
I'll kind of flip that and just say, like, the Bart Johnson touchdown, which I think was the first one of the Rose Bowl. We're just like, okay, we're here. This is crazy. Holy cow, we scored a touchdown. And, like, it wasn't loud because it was mostly Wisconsin people, but the TCU section made a noise, and that was pretty cool just to be like, okay, we're here, far away from Texas, and we scored a touchdown, and we're on national TV, and that's awesome. So I think the first touchdown of the Rose Bowl is probably the chills moment for me.
I like recovering the onside kick.
I don't know, that's when Tilly Mountain hit that, you know, 30-yard field goal back in 1960-something or
40-something. To beat Rice.
To beat LSU 3-2. I forget that one.
Melissa just outed herself as an old right there.
Nope.
Self-burn.
Yeah, you should be staying inside these next couple weeks.
Okay, greatest generation.
Moment. Shut up. It's a Rose Bowl moment, but it wasn't any play that happened. It was walking into the stadium and the moment when the planes flew overhead, and you just kind of realize that, like, holy cow, this game I've been watching on TV my entire life is happening, and I'm here supporting my team in it. Like that, the moment that you heard those engines, like, that kind of to me was like the wow. Like, I get chill bumps just thinking about it now.
I mean, you could just say literally any moment from that day.
Well, yeah, Melissa's also a California girl too, so that means extra for her.
Yeah,
right.
Driving down Rodeo Drive, seeing a bunch of people wearing purple and just blaring the fight song with my windows down and my sunroof open, and just having people like throwing up the frog. That was cool.
Everything is futile at King of Snacks. Should we run the ball more in 2020? Parker?
No!
Like, why do you hate running the ball?
Because running the ball, it's not efficient.
How is it not efficient?
Willfully putting yourself in a worse position.
If you get 60 yards...
Okay, say that to LaDainian Tomlinson.
Qualifiers. Running the ball on second and short and third down and fourth down is great. Running the ball close to the goal line is great. Running the ball on first and 10 every dadgum time is not great. So that's my aversion to running.
So
TCU had one of the highest rush rates in the Big 12, even playing most games from behind, which means, you know, when you're behind, you should pass more. TCU's offense was way better when they did pass more. They should absolutely not run the ball more.
But we should on second and manageable, third and short. Fourth and
sure,
short.
Second and four, run the ball. I don't care. Stop running on first and 10, second and 10, third and 8. Stop it.
Okay, I can understand that reasoning. It seems like you hate running the ball, period. I can understand. You have to get 10 yards. Get 10 yards.
Yeah, well, like, why put a ceiling on it? First down's a free play. You can either give yourself a 0% probability of scoring a touchdown and run it for 3 yards, or give yourself a, you know, 20% chance at touchdown and throw the ball down the field.
So, 0% probability? I mean, we were talking about that LT-406 game just a little while ago. It's not a 0% probability.
Derrick Henry had a 99-yard touchdown.
When you have an overwhelming talent advantage, do whatever you want. That's the kicker. Sure, if you're Alabama playing Wofford, run the triple option. Who cares? Yeah.
But, like, the Ravens ran the ball the most in football this year. The 49ers ran the ball the second most.
No. The Ravens ran the ball the most. Two reasons. One, because they average like 9 yards per carry because Lamar Jackson's a freak and their offense was something no one else had seen. But their run rate even still is inflated. You've got to take out garbage time because they were able to run so much because they got ahead so early and then they ran. That stat about like the four teams who rushed the most all made the playoffs. Well, it's because, yes, they were good and they were up, so they ran to run the clock out because they had already established a lead. They weren't good because they ran. They ran because they were good and they could just chill after a little bit.
I got 2 minutes ago you were beaten down by the game and now you're all fired up. Give me five more questions. Let's go. All right, Parker, from Brian Banks, Abby Banks 2121. Let Parker explain EPA and its usefulness for one full minute without interruptions. Your timer starts in three, two, one.
Okay, yards per carry is a really noisy stat because it doesn't tell you much about the situation. What EPA, expected points added, does is it takes an average using some advanced statistical techniques that people smarter than me do a lot better with and says, what do we expect someone to do in this situation? Down, distance, and yards from the end zone. Expected points added just tells you how much better or worse you did than the baseline. You can do opponent adjustments. It's a really good descriptive stat to say, If you ran the ball on third and three and got 3 yards, that's a success. That's positive EPA. You should get credit for that. If you ran the ball on first and 10 and got 3 yards, that's terrible and you should get negative points. EPA assigns partial credit and helps us better understand how you performed rather than yards gained.
Does he have any time left?
He's got 15 more seconds. 15 more seconds.
Go,
Nerd.
I still will never understand it, but it sounds like, so people smarter than you came up with this?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm absolutely yes. There are people who have PhDs in statistics. I'm not even. I don't know that much about statistics at all.
What are you studying in grad school?
Economics.
So are you going to do this to turn the economy around? Like, we shouldn't spend money on the first hour every day?
Expected viruses added.
You have to pay me for that kind of analysis. The sports stuff I'll do for free. But start
all right. Man. Over all under. Man. 0.5 Big 12 titles for GP from now until he retires.
Over.
Because we're all saying 2020. At least us two are saying 2021.
2021!
Under.
Under, Parker.
You don't think we're going to win a single Big 12 title before Gary Patterson retires in 2024?
Based on the current information that we have, nope.
What is the information we have? Are you reading the future?
No, I'm saying based on the information that I have and TCU's doubling down on an offensive system that is not anywhere close to modern football or what people at the top of the field are doing. TCU will have another great defense and a competent offense. We'll win 10 games. We'll lose in the Big 12 title game. We'll go to the Alamo Bowl, and that'll be fun.
That's going to be next year.
Is this 2020 or 2021 you're talking about?
Oh, my gosh. If I wasn't a grad student and had my income, I would bet my entire income we won't go to the Alamo Bowl next year. But
yeah.
So you're saying 2021, lose the Big 12 title game.
I just don't see TCU having a path. Like, the only thing we can do is improve our talent because our system is evidently going to stay the same, and so we're not going to have an overwhelming talent advantage. That's not going
to
happen.
But what if the system is more to your liking with Meacham back in the fold? I believe you're a pro Meacham guy.
So that would be new information, right? I don't think that's going to happen. I'm saying, but if I'm wrong about that, which I really hope I am, and something changes offensively next year, so that 2021 is really, really set up, then yeah, I think with an improved offense, we'll have a talent balance with the rest of the Big 12. And then with the right scheme and the right system and the right usage, we could do some damage. So I would update that absolutely based on what happens in the offense next year. But as of right now, I don't think they will.
Do you think the Big 12 is more even talent-wise now, though? Like, say, the next 2 years? With Oklahoma not having an unproven quarterback, I think that's been what's head and shoulders put them above everyone else the last 4 years.
Well, it's not like I'm going to play quarterback for them. He's a five, like Rattler's a five-star and he's been learning for a year. So, who knows? Like, there's a lot of uncertainty. I think a team like Oklahoma State and Iowa State are uniquely positioned to make an impact, but we'll see.
Oh, I think Oklahoma State's the best team in the Big 12 this year. I think 2021, I think as we've been saying for weeks now, years now even, that's poised for this team.
I think it'll be TCU's best year since probably 15. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. 18.5 passing touchdowns for Duggan in 2020, over under.
I got to even look at what he had this year.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, if Meacham does put you back into more of a 2014-15 mold.
Oh, over. He had 15 this year, and he sucked. Over. Yeah, holy cow.
You say Max Duggan sucked?
Yeah, you're going to need to get off the Purple Mist podcast right now.
Max Duggan had a bad statistical year this year just in terms of the passing game. Yeah.
Don't speak about my only son that way.
He's going to get so much better, and I'm so excited for him, and he's absolutely the future, and he was not what was wrong with the team this year. But he will absolutely be over 18.5. Yeah.
I think
that's an easy over.
I think it's also an easy over. 9.5 touchdowns by freshman in 2020.
Well, I mean, Quentin Johnston's going to win the Biletnikoff, so.
Well, you also have Johnston, but you also have, I think both running backs are technically a redshirt freshman.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
So that'll hit you the over with Barlow.
Yeah, for sure.
Because we're going to have two freshmen at running back?
Yeah, both are redshirt freshmen. They both will be.
Yeah, and so I think that'll work. I think guys like Mykel. Yeah, because I don't think Dane Mercado is going to like take the lists or take the bulk of carries or anything. So just running backs alone, I would say over. Yeah.
Yeah. What's the best dinosaur?
Dude, I gotta go T-Rex. I was actually watching Jurassic Park with my wife before I came over, and it's a basic answer, but he's the tyrant lizard king, man. You come at the king, you best not miss.
I'm a big fan of Brontosaurus personally. I was really into dinosaurs when I was little, and that was my favorite one. So, Brontosaurus person here.
Didn't they come back and say those never existed or whatever?
Well, Brontosaurus used to be called Apatosaurus, but they just changed the name.
No, that's what it was? They just changed the name?
Yeah, I think that's what you're thinking of.
Okay. And they're also vegan, so you're from California, that checks out.
No.
I'm not a vegan, though. I'm not a vegan.
Parker, you have a take on dinosaurs?
Let me make some barbecue.
Jurassic Park 2 gave me nightmares, so I don't really like dinosaurs that much. Really? I guess Velociraptors are cool, though.
Velociraptors are cool. I'll say that or T-Rex.
You sit there and say you don't like dinosaurs because they give you nightmares, and then you pick the scariest dang dinosaur in the world.
Love and hate are closely intertwined emotions, Melissa.
It's very true, actually.
Are Velociraptors scarier in the Jurassic Park interpretation, where they're like 6 feet tall, or in the real life interpretation, where they're like 3 feet tall and covered in feathers?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they're just birds. Yeah, most dinosaurs are just birds or alligators, so... definitely the Jurassic
Hot take.
We don't have time to get into that.
Birds are also scary. So that's just me, though.
What was your first car? These are all still from B-Banks 2121.
Purple Honda Fit, baby. Which I left a mark in the retaining wall on University going up the hill on an icy night in college. Oh. So that's still there.
Okay, Casey.
I hit some ice. That's a true story.
Did you hit some ice, or did you hit some eyes?
I hit some ice with my tires.
Okay. We've just joked about it twice, and I just feel compelled to say that drunk driving is bad, and we shouldn't do
drunk
it.
Drunk driving is bad.
Drunk driving is bad. 100%. If you learn nothing else today, make it that.
Take that home. EPA and don't drink and drive.
Yes,
I have like a Chevy golden van. That's what I drove in high school. Like a van that was gold.
Wow. Shaggin' wagon.
Yeah. It was a wagon.
Pretty nice.
It was a wagon. Who's the best Muppet? Kermit. He's a frog.
Well, we didn't hear their
Oh, we didn't
cars.
Get their first car? I'm sorry. Yeah. What was those first cars?
Forest Green, limited edition Eddie Bauer Ford Explorer.
Oh, I had an Eddie Bauer limited edition white Ford Explorer, 1994.
1994, yes, that exact car. That's awesome.
No way. You had green headlight. Yeah, that was my first car. It was my dream car. I caught it on fire, and it burned to the ground in Branson, Missouri when I was working at Canada Cup.
Mine caught on fire,
what?
Too. That's hilarious. Yeah.
What?
What is happening? Was there a recall out
there? Yeah.
There's like a disclaimer sticker near the license plate. May catch on fire.
They call them Ford Exploders for a reason, you know?
Yeah.
Parker's been having hot takes since 94, apparently.
Yeah.
There you go. I got a chuckle from somebody. Who's the best Muppet?
I mean, Kermit is a fave, but I do love Sam the Eagle. I think Sam the Eagle's hilarious. He's the patriotic
one. I'm kind of partial to those two dudes that sit in the balcony and just roast everybody all the time. I don't know their names.
Statler and Waldorf.
I enjoy them. Yeah, there you go.
You pulled that way too fast.
Yeah. I know my Muppets, man. I love Muppets.
What'd you say, Parker?
Jason Segel in the Muppet movie when he becomes a Muppet.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
I'll go with Kermit because he's a frog and I'm basic. Daniel Duncan, as bad as we think our offense was last year, we were actually decent between the 20s. Would we have won 8 had we converted 20% of the field goals sunk kicked into touchdowns? Parker?
Clint, I'm going to need you to repeat that question because I could not hear a word of it.
Okay, Parker. This is from Daniel Duncan at D Duncan Soul.
Yes.
As bad as we think our offense was last year, we were actually decent between the 20s. Would we have won 8 had we converted 20% of the field goals sunk kicked into touchdowns?
So I did the did the math on this one, and I'm going to do it again live right here as we go. So TCU, so first, before I actually do the calculations, there's a little bit like of a selection issue there, because if I knew that 20% of Jonathan Song's field goals would be we'd score touchdowns instead of, we would have used Jonathan Song more and not like punted from the 42 and actually played to like get into field goal range. But if you look at that, so Jonathan Song had a great year. we used him really selectively. He made 95.8% of his field goals for 108 points. And so if 20% of those go for go and become touchdowns, you basically add 4 points to that because he was automatic on the extra point. That comes out to about 8.3 points a game, which is about a touchdown a game. 6-1 score losses, yeah, I think a touchdown a game changes it. I mean, you look at SMU, this wasn't even a field goal, but like the SMU 4th-and-1 where we didn't even take the points, we didn't even try for a touchdown, we just ran two stupid plays in a row and hoped something happened. A touchdown there would have mattered a whole lot. And then Song had a field goal later. So I think over a touchdown a game probably gets you 2 or 3 wins this year, if you can somehow magically translate that. But it's not like TCU got into the red zone and was super unlucky. It was TCU got into the red zone and was bad. So, yeah, a touchdown a game absolutely increases your win total probably to the you know, 7, 7.5 expected wins.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Last set of questions from Bayou City Frog. Play calling was one of our most lamented topics during the season, especially around creativity and predictability. Parker focuses a lot on run versus pass on downs in a system where most plays...
I think they can't hear you. Start over again. Billy.
Or you can go Clinter. Yeah, I just couldn't hear him.
In a system where most plays have run-pass optionality built in, how would you offer present Parker's analysis to help improve scheme play calling? Basically, do you like RPOs?
I think you're asking if I liked RPOs, and I absolutely do. And I think that TCU should absolutely use them better. You saw a lot in the Texas game, especially. TCU was really working on a zone dive with a bubble screen tag. They never actually called it, but the screen option was like a Kenny. The screen RPO was like a Kenny Hill special, and so that's definitely in TCU's book. I hate the RPO with the screen, though. I mean, it's better than just a straight up run play. Like having that option is great. What I really would like to see is more RPO with a tight end over the middle. Twice in the red zone against Oklahoma, TCU ran a pretty nice little play action pop pass to the tight end over the middle, and twice they dropped it, which is unfortunate. But that kind of like over the middle, make linebackers make a decision is a really, really cool thing to do. I was honestly disappointed they didn't do more of it with a freshman quarterback, so relying less on his arm to make the play and more on the defender's mistake. So hopefully, you know, we're talking about Jerry Kill coming in with a robust run game and helping out with that. Maybe there's some RPO options. Maybe there's some combo guard tackle stuff they can run that can change up the looks a little bit and be a little more confusing, a little more deceptive besides, you know, screens and then precision bombs 30 yards to the sideline and then zone dive in the middle. So, yeah, I think RPOs are there. There's a lot of possibility. There's also a lot of possibility to do those and do them poorly. So.
Next question from Bayou City. I'm just going to direct these all to you. They're all about advanced stats and stuff.
Turn the mic. Can you turn the mic or something? Thank you.
Hello? Is this better?
Yeah, that's way better.
Okay. How can coaches use apply advanced stats in college football as the best application on defense?
Yeah, so I think a lot of that is like positional tracking data they're getting in the NFL and just looking at like how people are lining up, what are the frequency of the route trees. And then I think what you could do is you could look at, you know, if I had ideal tracking data, XY coordinates at every second of where every player was, which they have for some of these NFL games. I think you've heard about people joking about like watching the dots on Twitter. It's what the nerds talk about. Next gen stats, NFL games, they had like this online thing that was literally just the dots of the players as they moved. And it's awesome. They're storing that data. But you'd like to see like you divide the field into hexagons and say like, okay, they're attacking this alley relative to where the ball is placed relative to the sideline. They're attacking here often and breaking that up. So I think a lot of like formation data, because all advanced stats are is doing exactly what coaches do. Coaches from the minute we had film have been padding where they go through and they direct every single play, draw every line of every play and recording that data. Advanced stats is just making use of that data one more easily and then looking for trends and patterns with some statistical methods to kind of parse out the noise and the fact that it's a one-shot draw. So coaches are using data and advanced stats, but a lot of that is looking at let's look at more context. What are teams doing on first downs and open plays? I like to filter drives for starting in your own territory. So I'm not making decisions off of, you know, what happened after a turnover. I care more about what the offense is doing when it's really rolling. And so you can do some situational analysis. And then some of those more advanced methods like drive control and EPA, I think go a long way.
Have you run any regression analysis to see what the number one contributing factor was to offensive success this season?
There's a ton of endogeneity in that. So endogeneity is like when two things are related. The specific example is if I was like going to regress student parent income on school testing outcomes, there's like a latent variable there, right? That student has ability that is affected, that is affected by parent income and affected by other factors that also affects your testing score. So we've got to control for kind of those latent, unseen, unobserved factors. So I haven't really thought about a model of causality. Some people have, but it gets so messy because you start thinking, what happens with offensive success? Well, it depends on the skill of the offense and the defense. It depends on the lineup of the offense and the defense, or the alignment. That alignment also depends on the skill, and it depends on the play prior and the plays prior in the game, what happened. It depends also on the execution of the line, which is basically random. And it depends a lot on just so many variables. One, we can't control for all of them. Two, I don't think a straight up regression analysis is there. So that's why I like to focus on, you know, kind of drive efficiency and then EPA stuff, looking a little contextually, where were you good, where were you bad? And then we can kind of diagnose. EPA is a little rocky predictively because, again, some of those endogeneity issues. But overall, like, you can't just do yards per play on play call because there's so many things that go into it. So I haven't done a regression analysis on that because it's super messy and I don't think we have the data. And I don't think it's the right way to think about what we're looking at.
You look like you're ready for a rap battle right now, by the way. The way you're kind of moving side by side.
Yeah. I'm very, like Melissa said earlier, I as well have been diagnosed with adult ADD or ADHD. And I'm also podcasting from my bathroom and it's super hot. And so I'm just wiping my face and I'm kind of bouncing. You know, just,
I wonder what the towel is about.
Well, I noticed the shower curtain too. That's funny. And you mentioned a second ago, you said this is random, but are there advanced stats for the offensive line?
There, so at the NFL level, you'd have to chart it manually. So like my friend Adam Lunt, who runs a podcast called Tape Don't Lie, Tape Doesn't Lie, which is an Oklahoma State podcast, they manually track pressure rate and pass block wins. And that's something that's really subjective, not standardized. You have to track. At the NFL, they're just starting to do that. But even then, it's kind of weird because what's going to happen? Well, like the best players are going to get double teamed more. And then a lot of the blocking assignments are going to vary based on so many factors. Even just like a pass block win rate has a lot of selection issues in it too. So people are starting to think about that, but not really developed there. I will use this opportunity to expose a new audience to the fact that sacks are largely a quarterback stat. Whether the quarterback throws away or gets out of a tackle is largely the fault of the quarterback, not offensive lines. So I think sacks are a pretty misleading stat.
You get, I don't know what just happened. I feel like it's went into a, like, I feel like Will Ferrell in Old School. Like, I just went into a coma and said a bunch of smart stuff and then came back out of it. Last one, the PM crew talks a lot about 2021, but I feel like we can't waste 2020. Spencer Rattler will be in his first year. You get Oklahoma State and Iowa State at home. Wallow's a senior, married might go early, plus no expectations. What do you guys think? I don't think we're going to waste 2020, but I think this could be an 8-plus win team.
Yeah, it could be a very strong year.
I said that last night go listen to my podcast. But like next year, 8 wins, whether that's 7 in a bowl game or 8 in the regular season, feels like the baseline of, you know, so you want at least 7 regular season wins and not all of them to be one-score games. So more wins, fewer one-score games. When you're winning, that really feels like progress. So it's not going to be a national championship year. Got to calibrate your expectations. That's not happening. And it's a little weird because we've had to reset twice in a row now with Sean Robinson and then now with Max Duggan. But with that continuity, you're just looking for improvement. So I don't think it'll be a wasted year. It won't be a national championship year. But 8 wins, go beat a Pac-12 team in the Cheez-It Bowl. Hey, that's fun.
That is fun. All right, guys, that'll do it for this week. Get anything you want to plug? Obviously, get the cool stuff, the bracket of Frogs of War. Anything else you guys are working on you want to shout out? Melissa, you haven't talked in an hour. Melissa, you haven't talked in a while. Yeah, say something.
Yeah, make sure that you come check out Frogs of War. We're trying to, just like everybody, we're just trying to give you guys fun stuff to read. And bracket's been a lot of fun. I'm doing a podcast with Anthony Norris, breaking it down this week. So, yeah, appreciate when you guys check it out.
Yeah. Parker, you said you got the new podcast out, and just follow him, Stats of War, for a bunch of numbers.
We're on Twitter.
There numbers and hard to understand graphs.
Clint, you got anyone to say something?
Yeah. Follow me on Twitter, @Clint_Foster55. I'm not going to enlighten you with any numbers or anything, but I post some GIFs that I think are funny.
Yeah, and I'm @BillyWessels, @TC_Rebels. I've been making a bunch of dumb jokes during the coronavirus. there's some recruiting updates over at PurpleMinutes.com, too. Which is kind of what I'm supposed to be doing anyway, but there's not much else to talk about. All right, thanks, guys, for coming on. We'll talk to y'all next week.